Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed, and it's Thursday, which means it is Author of the Week time, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. Fantastic folks there making it possible for us weekly to chat with all sorts of different authors, as oftentimes the books are up and coming or perhaps out already. And then every so often, there is a book signing, and we usually try to have the author the week of the book signing, and Christopher Whitcomb is with us. The book is Anonymous Mail, A Life Among Spies, and you and I having a conversation off air. Interesting background, to say the least. If you would, just so people get a sense of who you are, walk through what your career path has been before we get into the details of the book.
Good morning, Nick. Really nice to see you. I've got to say, as a writer, I really appreciate what you do. These shows are fabulous.
Thank you.
The writing world, near and dear to my heart and all your listeners. So thank you very much for bringing in. And I've got to say, it's kind of tough to figure out how to start with this book because I'm kind of a Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy character. I will say that I started life as a writer. That's what I always wanted to be. Somehow I ended up in the FBI, and somehow I migrated from the FBI to the intelligence community, which would include numerous agencies. Most people would specifically know the CIA. Mm-hmm. As a result of that career, I went into television news. I've written for many, many outlets. I was a staff writer at GQ magazine. I had an op-ed contract at the New York Times. I have written for HBO, Netflix, CBS Films. I've written movie scripts and television. And let's see, what are we? And then many, many adventures along the way. Many of those adventures while in me, in NBC News. I worked as an on-air analyst every day for NBC Properties, which was NBC, MSNBC, and CNBC, from 2001 till the end of 2006. And while I had those media covers, I spent a great deal of time in foreign countries doing other things, most specifically Afghanistan. I was in Afghanistan about three weeks or a month after 9/11 on a solo gig. Somalia, Yemen. I've operated in well over 30 countries around the world. So anyways, it's a very, very broad story. And I'll say to the readers, the first thing they'll think is, what is this guy's nuts? And I will say, yes, it is a nuts story. But this is a Random House book. It has been featured by the New York Times in two separate articles, picked for their summer reading list, and nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. So as crazy as the story sound, it is a well-documented story.
The path that you've been on, was that something that you sought out? Did you think at a particular age, these are the sort of adventures I want to have? Or did they just develop and you went along?
Great question. I'd say it's both. I grew up in a very small town in northern New Hampshire, maybe 250 people at a ski area. My dad ran a ski area. So I grew up in the middle of nowhere. However, my Uncle Harold was a gentleman named Harold Janine, who at the time was kind of the Bill Gates, Elon Musk of his time. He was the world's first multinational corporation builder. And as odd as this sounds, it's very widely documented, but he and ITT, which is now Community Colleges, back in the day was a huge corporation. He and ITT financed the overthrow of a guy named Salvador Allende in Chile in the early 70s. And Chile came after him. They blew up their offices in New York, and he sought refuge at an estate he had in northern New Hampshire. So I spent a lot of my youth there with the CIA. So my exposure as a growing up in a very small town also included exposure to that world, including a guy that worked for my dad at the ski area, shot and killed the number two person in the FBI at the time, a guy named William Sullivan, who was in a hunting accident. So all these crazy stories. So did I choose it myself? Yes. Did I have nothing to do with the fact that it came true? Yes. It was a combination of the two.
We are talking with our author of the week, Christopher Whitcomb. The book is Anonymous Mail, A Life Among Spies. So tell us about the book.
It's the second memoir. The first was a book called Cold Zero, which was a memoir, really, of my time in the FBI hostage rescue team, which at the time I didn't really know it, but included some really controversial, some really awful things that have become American history that I didn't know would be at the time, including the Branch Davidian siege in Waco, Ruby Ridge, which are obviously hot button issues. They were terrible.
That seems crazy that for two of those moments in history that you note are very controversial, that you were involved with both of those.
They came back to back very quickly. And I've got to say, because of the nature of my job, they were just operations, missions, gigs, whatever at the time. And they took on a life of their own, and they've become huge. You know, there were Senate hearings. I testified before the United States Senate. There was a grand jury that tried to put me in jail for murder. All of those things now we talk about. And I know it's a hot-button issue. I can only say that I've talked about them in great length in that book and since then. And that Netflix series, Waco, American Apocalypse, I was one of the four people that Tiller Russell interviewed for that Netflix series. I was the sniper. There. So those were they're difficult for me to really to put in context because I talked about them in that first book, Cold Zero, which did well as a big bestseller. And then I kind of put it away for all these years. And this is a sequel to that book. This book more or less starts on 9/11. And it is more or less what happened to me when I left the FBI and went into the intelligence community, which has been nuts. It's wild.
Nuts in a good way, bad way? Does it change your perspective? What's your mindset now? And, of course, your own experiences, but just the reputations, fairly or unfairly, of a lot of these institutions over the last several years. People just don't have the same perception, the average person, of these institutions. Having been part of them and what you see today, just how do you feel about all of this?
It's very difficult to say in 10 minutes. It's difficult to say in two books or in 30 podcasts, and I've done a lot of podcasts. It's very difficult to say, but I'll put it in this context. When you move from, there is a continuum that you go from being a crossing guard in public service, public safety, right? And you move to the far margins of what people even know exists. I've had that entire continuum. And along the way, you find a testing system. You test physically, mentally, decision-making, psychologically, and you just get, in my case, you get sucked up higher and higher. So I went to the FBI. From the FBI, I went to the hostage rescue team. From the hostage rescue team, where I worked, at that time, black operations, because pre-9/11, terrorism was considered law enforcement, so we got all the gigs. People know about renditions. We did all of them. I've been involved in many, many, many classified operations and many missions in the FBI other than Waco, like the coal bombing in Yemen, for example, or I don't know, so many. As a result, I had a skill set that helped me migrate to the intelligence community where I could work a non-official cover in media, for example, or businesses. I've started numerous large businesses where you have a specific skill set, which could be communicative, it could be writing skills, it could be something that has nothing to do with shooting people in the head. It has something to do with a diminishing subset of specialized skills, and I just kind of fell into that. So I kind of went to the very, very far edges, and I found myself in Asia, a country called East Timor, where I built a corporation of 4,000 people, a security company. And I think that's really where I made a change. And it was, when we say nuts and you ask the question, I think I certainly went nuts. And I think that the world I lived in would be very difficult to explain other than the fact that it's nuts. So you have to match the two. You have to find the person that is capable of doing those things. Going into Somalia, for example, where I got stranded at the second best airport in Somalia on an intelligence agency gig, with no money, no passport, no technical or my private army, things like that, those situations are very difficult to deal with. So you need someone that feels comfortable, I suppose, in that.
Sure.
So that's really what this book is. It's an explanation of that path.
A lot of this sort of work, I imagine, is very secretive in nature. How is it you're able to write about it? Do you have to get permission? Do these agencies go through this and sign off and say, yeah, this is okay, no, this isn't?
Short answer is yes. You sign a document when you join the FBI that says it has to go through pre-publication review, and my first book did, Cold Zero. Then I wrote two novels that were fictionalized accounts of classified operations. They were true stories, two novels, Black and White, about that world, and I don't think I did send those through. This book in particular is very difficult because I was never formally employed as a case officer with the CIA or as a formal employee with any other agencies. But that world works on a contract basis, and it's complicated. You could get, you'll see on podcasts, people will talk about being a CIA contractor because they worked a security detail at the embassy in whatever country. That was not my gig. My gig was all subcontract work, I guess is what people would, you know, if you put it in those terms, it's more complex than that, but that's primarily it. So trying to clear these things, I use the barometer of public disclosure. If something is available in the public sector or the public domain, then you can write about it. And I will use Snowden and Julian Assange and things like that. I've not disclosed formal secrets in document form, but I've talked about the world around those documents and around that. So I've not violated anything. This particular book has been read by agencies within the intelligence community, but it was slightly different than my first book with the FBI.
We're talking with our author of the week, Christopher Whitcomb. The book, Anonymous Mail, A Life Among Spies. And this may seem like an obvious question, but I suppose with this book, is this just give sort of the insider view of what that life is like?
It's a bit about what that life is like, though it's extremely difficult to explain. I've done my best. Mm. But it is more a path, I think. I think this is a human story that we all go. And everybody in life lives to the best of their experiences. And everybody suffers trauma. People go through various experiences. It doesn't matter what they are. We're human beings. We process mm-hmm. in a certain way. My stories may be more interesting to a certain extent than somebody.
Sure.
But a soccer mom who loses a tournament probably suffers the same psychological process that I did fighting in five mm-hmm. war zones, right? And my experience may be different. My stories may be different. My life experience may be different. My process may be the same as you or anybody else. So I think this story, it's a character arc. I started here. I went way, way, way out there. And I came back. And I think the primary point in this book is me saying, you can go to the far edges of human experience and make a comeback. And that's my arc.
Well, I can imagine living the sort of lifestyle that one does, and the experiences that you've had could probably lead to more tragic endings, less well-balanced individuals. But when you talk about coming back, that suggests to me that, you know, perhaps you felt lost or unstable or, you know, in a world of chaos. So I guess I'm asking, what when you say it's possible to come back, what do you mean by that?
It's difficult. I'm trying to understate what I've done in my life, but the things that I've done in my life, how I've done the things in my life, are very difficult to express. But imagine somebody that you, it's difficult to say because people don't know in a 10-minute conversation what I'm talking about.
Right.
But just imagine the far edges of what you suspect the government does. That's me. And it's all very widely documented. The publisher wouldn't print a word of this book
sure.
unless I backed it with photographs and contracts and things like that. But imagine somebody that does those things that you think exist, which is solitary work, extreme violence in denied areas around the world after 30 years of experience building this skill set, right?
Yeah.
And imagine what that might do to a person psychologically.
Right.
I was a good person. I migrated into that world because I had certain personality psychological traits that meant you could push me to those places. But there's a breaking point for every human yeah. being. And I sure as hell broke. And my comeback is a big part of the story.
Right.
And I lived in Bali for 3 years, had a surf shop, and I just tried to surf this thing out of me. I mean, now that sounds ridiculous. I needed 3 years away from the world, and I ended up in Bali. And I surfed big waves, and I got trapped under this wave and pinned down. And I remember having this very, very clear moment that world was over. And it was time to find my way back to a world that I believed in somehow. And I'd say it's probably been about 12 or 13, 14 years that it's taken me to get from that, from the jungles of Asia, this country, East Timor, to get metaphorically, to get back from my deepest, from the bottom, literally the bottom of the ocean, to get back to where I am now. So it is, it's a very, very intimate redemption story that has a lot of really wild war stories in between.
Were there any particular moments in which you found yourself thinking, I can't believe that I've been pushed this far, that I'm doing these things?
Great question. That happened very early on because I realized I loved it. I'm not an adrenaline junkie. I've done everything you could imagine. I've done many, many, many things that you could imagine that would induce adrenaline. I don't have adrenaline. I jump out of a plane. I rock climb. I surf big waves. I don't have adrenaline. I had an addiction to the edge of death, which is difficult to explain unless you read this book. But I loved the proximal thrill of consequence. And the largest consequence, which produced the largest thrill, was knowing you're going to die and surviving. So can I make sense of that in a brief conversation with you? No. Is it a part of what people experience in war, relationships? I mean, we all do it. The consequence is different. My consequence was significant. And letting go of that need for that consequence, I guess, whatever. Yeah. That was it.
Do you find that, I'm assuming that you're living a relatively normal life compared to what you were before, but do you find that that loner capacity that served you then, is that still who you are?
Another great question. I taught interrogation to the CIA and the FBI like some time off. I've done a lot of things. I wrote the curriculum for the FBI Academy some years ago. Along that way, I taught personality temperaments, Myers-Briggs and things of that nature. So I've taken all the tests, endless tests. And the answer is, I don't know. I don't think I'm any one thing. I think that I am an extrovert. I am an introvert. I spent 2 years on a plantation in South Carolina a few years ago writing books. But I could go to a cocktail party with a whoever. It doesn't matter. I have that continuum of experience. But I don't know what I am. I have no idea. But in this book, you probably get an idea of some of them, maybe.
So what's your hope when people read the book? What do you want them to take from?
To be honest with you, I wrote this book for me and for my family, from whom I became estranged. And very fundamental ways. I was estranged from the world, from humanity, and my family brought me back. And I think the one lesson in this book is we're all capable of going bad. We're all capable of coming back and becoming good. I lost everything. I lost God. I lost my family. I lost friends. I lost everything I had going out into this world. And I came back. And like you just asked, I wouldn't say I have a normal life, but I would say I have a life that has peace, and that has happiness, and I'm productive. I'm very productive again. This is the first of three books that I have coming out, two true crime books. So I'm back in the book world. This is the first one, okay. And there are two behind it.
And you are going to be doing a book signing, is that correct, Saturday, you think?
Yeah, I'm going to go hang out. I don't know if anybody's going to come, but I'm going to go hang out. And maybe, this is a fabulous show. Maybe some people will hear it. Maybe some people I haven't seen in a long time will come out and say
Would be nice. Do you know what time on Saturday?
I think it's 1 o'clock. Okay. It's either 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock on Saturday.
Okay, well, we'll find out and make sure that we spread the word. Well, appreciate the conversation. And as you said, there's only so much that you can really do during a 15-minute period of time. But, of course, the book can fill in so much. It's Anonymous, Male, A Life Among Spies, our author of the week, Christopher Whitcomb, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. For Springfield's Talk 104.1, I'm Nick Reed.